welcome into episode 50 of the Calcio Connection podcast. Feels like a bit of a milestone here, so I'm glad you guys can celebrate us. We're connecting with you, Italian football fans from all over the world. A lot of disappointment for Calcio Twitter and Calcio fans around the world today. Now, I think my co-host may disagree on this. We'll get into it. I don't know how our special guests, yeah, we have two of them today, feel about it. But, man, my heart was breaking today for Atalanta. And listen, I haven't been quite so over the top in adopting them as some Italian football fans have been. But I really, really was cheering for them against PSG in the quarterfinal of Champions League. And to see that team, Atalanta, have the 1-0 lead into the 90th minute and to concede twice, 90th minute and 93rd minute, to lose it in such shocking fashion. Oh, my heart really broke for Atalanta today. And I know that the reactions have ranged from anywhere from shock to sadness, sadness from a couple of the Atalanta fans that I know, to, you know, even people who support Inter, Juve, Milan, Roma, Lazio, who were cheering for Atalanta, just getting behind their underdog story and the amazing brand of football that they played all season long, the way they punched above their weight, you know, throughout the Champions League. It really was heartbreaking to see them go out to PSG that way. Before we introduce our special guests, let me introduce my co-host, who's somebody that has gone against the grain. I'm Alex Dono alongside Jerry Mancini. Jerry, you were one of the few, maybe the only Calcio fan that I know, Italian football fan that I know, that was not cheering for Atalanta in this game. You were actually going for PSG. Can you explain yourself, sir? You pissed off a lot of people today.
I'm a PSG fan. I'm not a diehard fan. I remember we had Jorge on a while back. He's a Lyon fan, and I actually discussed that I am a PSG fan, not heavily invested. I'm not some crazy PSG fan, but I just don't like Atalanta, and it's not because I understand the whole story and so good what happened to the city, and it's the whole fairy tale of everything that's happening. It's been a nice story. I get it. I hate Gasperini. I think he's a piece of shit. I think he's truly a piece of shit. And when you do bad shit and karma's a bitch, when you don't shake a person's hand like Moran. I remember it was one game this season where Moran stuck his hand out and he walked right by him and didn't shake his hand. And the whole stupid thing, the whole thing about the face mask and how he discussed about the coronavirus and just one stupid thing after another this guy has done, and the way he approaches things, I'm not a fan of him. I think he's a sore loser. He's always bitter. If it's not his way, he's never happy. He's never accepted the losing end. And as much as I always criticize Conte, he's just as bad and maybe even worse for someone who hasn't really won anything. So I don't know. I just don't like him at all. Just plain and simple. And like I said in the past episodes, I honestly think this team has always been overrated. A very good offense, a very shit defense. We saw that today. The defense was truly just didn't look good as the match progressed. It went on, and I think that PSG were very unfortunate that they didn't score more than two goals, in my opinion. I think they should have finished the game with maybe five goals. And that's not even the point, though. It's just when I see how well Lazio did, and I'm not trying to be biased, I'm a Lazio fan, and then they get written off in the second half, and everybody forgets about what Lazio has done and how good they've been this season, and all of a sudden it's become how good Atalanta has been the full season. But truly, I think that had the coronavirus never happened, Lazio would have been the better team than Atalanta, and yeah, they were consistent. They were consistent from start to end. And these are my arguments of why I'm very happy that Atalanta lost today. Not because of what... I understand that there's going to be takes online and how people may view me as you're a piece of shit because you never cheered for Atalanta and what happened to the city. And it's nothing against the city. And I feel very bad of what has happened in the past months. And that has happened to many other places as well in the world in the past 5-6 months, not just in Bergamo. But that's just my hot takes on it. I do like PSG. I'm a big Mbappe fan. I think he's a really good player, one of the best in the world. And I'm very shocked that Neymar finally delivered a big performance. But
yeah,
again, at the end of the day, you're not going to have everyone like how you feel, what you think, what your opinions are. Some are going to like you. Some are going to hate or dislike how you what you think. And that's just how things go. And if you like it, great. You don't like it, tough luck.
Well, I think for Atalanta, a lot of Calcio fans were able to kind of rally behind this squad because, you know, since you don't really consider them a big club because they're not a historic power, you know, people who are fans of Juve and Inter and Milan and Roma and Lazio and Napoli, like they just don't hate Atalanta because you don't have that history of being rivals with them. So seeing how well they've been doing, it's kind of been an easy club to rally behind. Now, in the case of Gasperini, as an Interista, my views on Gasperini are very complicated. I really respect his football. I love the way he gets his players to play together and kind of overachieve. Now, personally, I'm not really a fan of the guy because, you know, he had a brief unsuccessful stint at an Inter that was a mess at the time he was there, and he does nothing but talk about how terrible a time he had at Inter. So he's a guy a lot of Interisti hate. Something that in this match was interesting because a lot of bitter Interisti were saying, you know, I really have a hard time either, you know, cheering for PSG because they have Icardi, or, you know, Atalanta because of Gasperini. This was the perfect outcome because Gasperini gets eliminated and PSG didn't score until Icardi was subbed off. So I think it was kind of the perfect scenario. But let me bring in our special guests on this. First, let's welcome back a guy who hasn't joined us in quite a while, the Boston Giallorossi on Twitter. John McDonough is with us, who's taken a few minutes away from, like, the seven children that he has running around. So we're happy you could take some time. John, how are you?
Things are great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And let me get your take. Were you one of the many Italian football fans, unlike Jerry, who were actually behind and supporting Atalanta to eliminate PSG today? Didn't happen, of course, but were you on that bandwagon?
Yeah, I mean Jerry's a troglodyte. So, I mean, this makes sense. It's very open brand for him, for his Lazio support, etc. So this makes total sense that he would have that opinion. I mean, who couldn't be a fan of Atalanta? Gasperini, yeah, he might be kind of a dick. I don't know, but he seems it. But their football is fantastic. It's been building for years, right? If you watch them 3-4 years ago into what they've turned into now, it makes total sense over the course of time. So I was thrilled. It was funny because obviously I'm on vacation right now. And we left the house in about the 65th minute. And I was like, okay, good. I'll just keep an eye on it. And I start seeing my text chain go off that that's horrible. This is horrible. And I looked at it and I walked away from my table and said, oh my God, that's not what I expected. So yeah, that was my experience today. I was really disappointed. I was hoping they were going to advance. So.
Yeah. It's not only like not advancing, but just going out the way that they did. And listen, for Atalanta, like they can certainly take pride in their season. So that this is like nothing to be ashamed of because they never, you know, considering their payroll and who they are, they never should have even been in the final eight against PSG. So they can take a lot of pride in their Champions League run. But at the same time, the heartbreak to lose the way that they did. Well, let's bring in our other special guest. And I think it's no secret we're going to be talking a lot of Roma in this episode because our other special guest is Steve Chiavillo from Chiesa di Totti, who we've had on a few times before. Steve, how are you? And what are your thoughts on Atalanta's elimination today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on again. I'm doing well. I was disappointed. I didn't watch the whole match. I watched the first half, and then, you know, I'm an Islanders fan, so I was watching the hockey, and I happened to catch the last 10 or 15 minutes during intermission, and it was a terrible way to lose, you know, holding that 1-0 lead for close to 60 minutes. I think they scored around the 30th minute, and then just to give it up the way they did was definitely disappointing. I don't have any animosity toward Atalanta like Jerry does. You know, I rooted against them during the season because that's who Roma was chasing for that Champions League place.
Right.
But, you know, in Europe, you can't root against them. I mean, they're a great story. My one gripe with them is they don't really play any Italian, so they don't really contribute to the national team. But other than that, they're a great story. And how can you not root for that team against all the odds, you know? And it makes Serie A look good when teams besides Juve advance far in these European competitions. So disappointing for sure. I thought when they were up 1-0 for almost the whole game that they were going to pull it out and maybe make that magical run to the final, but it wasn't to be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I certainly like had my doubts. I thought, oh, they're going to have to score more than one goal to win this game. But then they got around like the 85th minute, 86th minute. I'm thinking, okay, they're really going to pull this off and get a 1-0 win over PSG. And then, man, the things just went sideways the way that they did. So I want to get into some Roma stuff with you guys. Roma has been an interesting club to follow in recent weeks because the ownership change, it's done. So going from Palota to Friedkin, admittedly, outside of the fact that it goes from one American to another, I don't know a whole lot about Friedkin. So let me start, Steve, with you on this. Your thoughts on the ownership change. How much do you know about Friedkin? And like, do you expect to see, you know, like significant, maybe seismic changes with the way Roma does business, whether it be, you know, the investments they make in players, maybe building towards that mythical stadium that we've been waiting for so long? Like, where do you think things go with Friedkin?
Yeah, so it's interesting because Friedkin, unlike Palota, as far as I know, doesn't have any sports connections. Palota had the Celtics connection when he came over to Roma. Friedkin, for all I know, is he's got a big Toyota presence down in the Houston area, down in the south, and that's where he made most of his money. My expectations right now, I'm trying to, you know, keep them in check because I don't really know what he's going to do. I don't think anybody really knows what his management style is going to be like, how they're going to invest. I mean, you mentioned the stadium. I think no matter who the owner is, whether it was still Palota or whether it was Friedkin coming in, they need that stadium to really generate the revenues that they need to be able to, you know, be a financially stable club. We've seen the wonders that the Allianz Arena has done for Juve to bring in that revenue. And really, that's why they've been a leg up on Serie A for so long now, ever since they got that stadium. And Roma really needs that stadium because they really can't afford to keep selling off their best talent. I hope the one thing Friedkin does differently than Palota is not sell off the big name so quickly, if possible. And one thing I expect to change is the brashness. You know, Palota always was running his mouth. Oh, we're not selling Allison. We're not selling this guy. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And he, you know, whether well-intended or not, it didn't work out for him in a lot of cases. And I don't expect to see that from Friedkin, you know, going back and forth with people on Twitter and things like that. So I think that's going to change. But really, I'm trying to, you know, keep my expectations in check till he really starts managing the club and we see what he does through a couple transfer windows and maybe a couple seasons and really just see where the stadium goes.
How about you, John? I mean, Palota certainly was not popular, at least for the final couple of years, among Roma supporters. How do you feel about this change and what are your expectations for Friedkin?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at Palota, I mean, as you look back on his reign at Roma, it's, and I think the one thing we can all agree on is that he didn't have the organizational skills necessary to run a club that big, right? It just didn't exist. I mean, he was never in Rome, and that mattered. What I'm hoping for with Friedkin is that they're able, and no one, I mean, I work in the finance world, right? And I've asked around a lot of people, and no one really knows a lot about the organization. So my kind of hopes are that they run a very tight ship, that they operate their businesses well and they structure them properly and that they keep a close eye on them. I don't think that happened well over the last 8 or 9 years and that the club is managed better. I think that makes a big difference in how the results will end up on the field. My hopes are that the organization is just a little bit tighter and I know that there's a lot more money involved in it. So my hopes are somewhat higher, but I've been, you know, I'm 40-something years old. I've seen this before, and I've been disappointed before, too. So,
certainly, man. I mean, in my take on it, like, I don't know a whole lot about Friedkin, but I know that it just wasn't working with Palota. Things were stagnant, and I think from his point of view, with him being unable to get the stadium done, I think he just threw his hands up and decided, like, there's nothing else I can do here. And I just think Roma, you know, that club just deserves better. I mean, Jerry, what do you think? You root for the other team in the city of Rome, so I know you probably wouldn't cry too many tears if things don't work out with Friedkin, but what's your expectation here?
Well, I never wish bad for any club. I don't care if it's Roma or if it's Juventus or Inter. Like, I believe in karma. What you wish on will come right back at you. So if you wish bad will come back. That's just my way of looking at it. But for Roma, I think this is a really good direction. They're getting someone who is willing to invest into the club and a change of face with their president. I think Palota just didn't really care about Roma. He he had a lot of issues with the fans. With we know that what was his name? Their sporting director was Petrakis was suspended. He had a fallout with Pelota, I believe. You guys probably know better than I do with when it comes to Roma. And now that they can start building a new direction to the club. Now, they're always going to be the laughing stock, no offense, because the last decade they have really done nothing under Pelota. And if it goes another decade now under Freaking Group, the same direction, and they don't win anything for the next 10 years, they're going to, well, I guess they're going to say, well, why did we get rid of Pelota? Maybe we should have kept him. Maybe the Freaking Group was the wrong decision. There's going to be so many ifs and buts and ands. But I think at the end of the day, this is the best decision for Roma. They really need a clear direction. That's what this team is really lacking. Like an identity. And just willing to invest in players that will help the team foresee for the future. Zaniolo is a good building block. I'm not sure if they're still trying to get Mancini, what's going on with that, or if they've absolutely have given up on it. I know that Mkhitaryan has been a decent player this season. Gianluca Mancini has shown bright signs.
You're probably talking about Smalling before, not Mancini, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Smalling. My apologies. And I just think that this team has pieces that can be put together to make a very strong team. And I'm being very open-minded, not some like Lazio-hated fan towards Roma. Because I think that in past seasons, they've been unfortunate where they have offloaded a lot of good young talent that maybe they should have kept and really could have made this team much better. At the end of the day, they just need to figure out how to get it right and how to put it together. I know there's rumors that Fonseca might not be even the manager next season. That I think that's a big mistake. I really do believe that he's someone that you can really build around. He is really getting a really good feel for the club. I think the players really like playing for him, other than Dzeko, maybe, after calling him out against Sevilla. He wasn't really impressed with him, but this is a guy who went from a back four to a back three and is really experimenting and willing to change things around to make things work. So I'm curious to hear as we go on what Steve and John think, but I do think at the end of the day, the future looks bright for Roma personally.
And that's a great segue, Jerry, because and John, I'll start with you on this one. Jerry brought up Fonseca. Obviously, you and Steve are much closer to these things. You read up on Roma more than Jerry and I do. I have heard rumblings in the rumor mill of Fonseca's future potentially being uncertain. You hear a lot of that with Edin Dzeko as well. He's most recently been linked to Juve, was linked a lot, you know, to Inter a couple transfer windows ago. So not that I think Inter is hot in pursuit of him at this moment, but maybe Juventus is. So, I mean, John, do you think, is there anything to this Fonseca stuff, to the stuff with Edin Dzeko? Do you expect both of them to be still with the club this coming season?
I would expect both of them to still be with the club, especially Fonseca.
Yeah.
It's madness. It's been, what, they've had how many, 12, 13 coaches over the last, like, I don't know, 12 years. It doesn't make any sense. You can't build a team like this. You can't have a team constantly in flux with new coaches and new styles. And it's madness, right? He's had a tough year. They had a lot of injuries. They've had a lot of injuries for a lot of years. And, you know, Fonseca seemed very stubborn for a little bit of time, especially during a little bit of a swoon in January. But he adapted. He showed that he can do that. I think that he's a good coach, and he just needs time, and he needs the players to be around each other. I mean, we talked about this last time I was on. It's like one of the biggest issue that the Roma has is that their midfield hasn't been together long enough to actually be any good together. They're too young and too inexperienced together to be a good midfield. How do you play like that? You can't. And the coach is going to be sort of damaged by the fact that they just don't have enough time together. So I just think it'll be foolish, especially considering in September the next season starts. So yes, for Dzeko, whatever. I mean, Dzeko can stay, Dzeko can go. I mean, I love the player and he's been awesome, but you know, he's what, in his mid-30s at this point.
Yeah.
He's not a superstar or whatever. I don't care. They just have to have a replacement for him.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. Well, what do you think, Steve? Do you agree that more than likely Fonseca and Dzeko both stay, or how do you see that playing out?
I agree, and I agree with what John said. I mean, you can't go and get rid of Fonseca after 1 year. I agree. I thought, you know, there was a lot of talk that he was stubborn early on, and during that January swoon, he could have done a better job of getting him out of it a little sooner, I think. But they did have Zaniolo and Diawara both out at the same time, which was a big blow to their starting 11, to their better players. But, you know, after the lockdown, he did a great job down the stretch. I think they went unbeaten in their last 7 or 8 matches. They had only, of those 7 or 8 matches, they just drew the one to Inter late. So they really could have been on a 7 or 8 game win streak to close out the Serie A campaign before that Sevilla match. So he's shown, I think, plenty of good things, despite some of the bad that we've seen from him, to definitely warrant at least a second year. And if the second year goes a little bit better than the first, then I think he, you know, earns another one. Because in order to win, you need to build around a system and, you know, keep a roster together. You know, like John said, the midfield is very young. You know, they need time to gel together. Just today we're seeing rumors of selling Diawara for Torreira to Arsenal just to make a plus Valenza. So hopefully that doesn't happen. Because you need that continuity. You need to keep the system in place. Fonseca showed at Shakhtar that he's a good coach, you know, not just from what he did in Ukraine, because it's only the Ukrainian league compared to Serie A, but in the Champions League, he had some big wins too. So his teams know how to play if he has enough time to implement that system and get the right players for his system. You know, he's still working with a lot of dead weight from the Di Francesco years and even the Spalletti years before that. And, you know, they got to get a few more players for him. And then on Dzeko, I expect to see him back. You know, he was arguably their MVP this year. You know, a lot of their play runs through him. I think they do need to get another striker, which we'll talk about later in the transfer market. But, I mean, when you look at his Roma career, they got him for a total of 19 million euros, I think 5 seasons ago now. And, you know, he scored 106 goals and have 50 assists or so in 220 matches in his Roma career. So he's been a huge signing for them, really maybe their best value signing of the American era based on how long he's been here and how much he's produced for them. And I think he's a little bit underappreciated even by Roma fans because, you know, he doesn't always bury the goals that he should. You know, sometimes his finishing isn't the greatest, but he just does so much for them in the build-up play. And there's matches where he won't put a shot on goal, but he'll set up so much for his teammates. And I think he'll be back. I don't see him going to Juve to play second fiddle for someone. Same with Inter last year. He would have sat behind Lukaku. I don't think he wants to do that yet. I think he knows he still has some more good football in him. But I think they do need to start phasing him out a bit. But in order to do that, you need to get another capable striker, not like a Kalinic who can play right against the lower level teams, you know?
Jerry's favorite. He loves Kalinic.
Yeah.
Fucking stinks, man. He's
he'll
so
be on
bad.
Lazio next year.
No, we're getting that guy from Fenerbahce, whoever the heck that guy is. I've never seen that guy play a day in my life. But some guy.
Muriqi or something was that?
Yeah, Muriqi. My buddy Joe from the Napoli, Forza Napoli podcast said he's actually a very strong and good striker. Someone who
I've heard good things. I haven't watched him much, but he's pretty hyped up.
Yeah, apparently, but I'm just surprised that Tito's actually willing to spend money. That's all I'll say.
Well, and I want to, and Jerry, I want to circle back to you in a little bit to talk about David Silva, but let me get a couple more Roma things. And Steve, I'll stick with you on this one. And then I want to get John's take as well. Like you talked a little bit about the need for a second striker. Tell me beyond that, and you can expand on that if you want to, but even beyond that, what do you think are the biggest areas of need for Roma in the transfer window?
Well, first of all, they need to figure out their sporting director position because Petrarchi is still technically suspended. There was some talk that, you know, they might decide to bring him back because Friedkin was impressed with him back when they were initially, you know, feeling out the Roma situation, getting ready to put a bid in. I don't know if that'll happen, but they need to figure out who it's going to be, and they need to figure it out somewhat soon because before you know it, the transfer market will be upon us. It looks like the Pedro signing is still going to go through, even though Baldini's out of the picture. Because that was kind of, I think, his doing. But they definitely need a second striker. And when I say a second striker, it's not just like a Kalinic who's going to be there just to fill in for Dzeko against weaker sides or in the Coppa Italia. They really need someone who can fill the position after Dzeko and be a capable starter. My dream signing, which I've wanted for years, would be like a guy like Andrea Belotti.
Yeah.
if Friedkin wanted to spend a little money, I'm sure he could be had for closer to the 40 to 50 million euro range rather than the 100 million that they wanted from a couple of years ago. I think he'd be like an ideal replacement for Dzeko because he works hard like Dzeko. He's good in the build-up play, things like that. You know, there's been some talk about maybe Milik in exchange for Under, which wouldn't be a bad signing for them, I don't think. Especially if you don't have to shell out too much cash for him. I think Milik's a more than capable striker. But outside of striker, I'd say they need to figure out the Smalling situation. If Friedkin's willing to, you know, pony up 20 million or whatever United wants to settle on with them, I think they need to either bring back Smalling.
Do you think that's a fair price, by the way? I mean, when you look at that, you look at that 20 million. I mean, obviously he had a nice year for Roma. It was a flop at United. Do you think 20 million is too much?
It's, you know, based on the market, I don't know if 20 would be too much. I know at one point I think they were asking for like 25. I wouldn't want to go that high because he is, I think, 30 years old or so. If he can perform like he did this year for another 3 years or so, 18 to 20 million would probably be a reasonable amount since, you know, they got him basically for like a million or 2 euros on loan this year. So when you kind of offset it that way, it's not the end of the world to spend 20 million, I guess. But I mean, he was so good that it's hard not to bring him back. And I think maybe with Friedkin in position now with a little money to spend, they'll at least make that happen. They might need two center backs, depending on what they do with guys like, I think Juan Jesus will be on the way out, thank goodness.
Oh, God, he's terrible.
Fazio could be on the way out, too. You know, maybe they send him back to South America or some other, you know, mid-level team to finish out his career because he's about done, too, I'd say. So depending on what they do there, they might need a second striker, too. And then I'd say right back's another position of need because it sounds like Florenzi is going to be sold this offseason. Karsdorp is probably going to be sold. Zappacosta's loan is up. And then Bruno Perez had a nice close to the season, but, you know, he's still Bruno Perez, and you don't know how much you can trust him over the course of a full season. So you're going to need a starting caliber right back, in my opinion. And depending on what Fonseca does with the formation, if he sticks with the 3-4-2-1, which I thought worked really well for the personnel they have right now, you know, Perez is probably a better player than if they go back to the 4-2-3-1. Same with Spinazzola on the opposite wing. But either way, they're going to need someone on the right. I think on the left, they're a little bit better covered with Spinazzola and Kolarov. But, the wings need a little work, too. And then depending on sales, you know, there's talk that Paulo Lopez could be sold if they get the right price because he really was disappointing down the stretch. You might need a goalkeeper, maybe another midfielder to beef things up if they want to strengthen the midfield, if they want to maybe move someone. I know there's been talk of like Cristante being swapped out for another midfielder, things like that. And then I think the guys that are going to be sacrificed for the money to make some of these moves will be like the Kluiverts, the Unders, the Schicks, and guys like that.
Well said. John, what do you think? Biggest needs in the transfer window?
I can't really top what Steve just said. So, I mean, my thoughts are really simple. I mean, they need to figure out the Smalling thing. He worked really well. I think my perspective on the finances of it are slightly different. Like, I look at the market and you look at defenders that are signed at certain ages, and 20 million is an absurd number for him at his age. Like, is he going to perform? You know, he's happened to work really well this year. It was fantastic to watch, right? And you want those guys that can perform in Rome, because there are a lot of guys that are really good that can't perform in Rome. So is he a $20 million transfer? I don't know. 15 sounds more reasonable just based on comps, but that's the biggest thing to me, is like, he provided leadership. He provided stability in the defense, and he was just a great player for the team this year. It's just that and the next striker. I mean, I remember the year, go back a couple of years after they got rid of, after they moved on from Destro, right? The year after, it was a disaster. They had no center forward. Right. And, you know, you don't know that you're missing it until it's gone. Right. Destro wasn't a phenomenal player, but he was at least good at that position. And they need to figure out what that's going to be next. Dzeko has been amazing for years at this point, but he's coming to the end. They need to figure out who's next. Those are the two biggest things to me. And if they move on from Lopez, you know, they need another keeper. And then, you know, Cranio's the guy in my view. But,
oh yeah, I love Cranio too. I mean, I think it could end up being a competition. I don't really know. For a couple days, I saw him loosely linked to Inter, but I think they they think they also like Juan Musso from Udinese. And, so who knows? So maybe Cragno does end up at Roma. Now, John had mentioned something. So, Steve, I want your take on this. John, let me get your take on this. Steve had mentioned that, you know, he thought that Dzeko was arguably the MVP for Roma this year. Do you agree with that? Is he your MVP? And if you could pick a biggest flop, like the player who disappointed you most, John, who was that?
Yeah, so I'll go MVP first. So it's either between Dzeko or Vertu, and I go Vertu. They basically played the same number of games and the same number of minutes. I mean, Vertu played a couple fewer games, but he actually ran the whole time. And I'm a midfieldist, so my perspective is that midfield is like that's just how I live. Like that's my world. Like. Midfield is the most important. They basically, a good midfield covers for a bad offense or an average offense or a bad defense, and they make both sides better. And he's one of those guys that just made the team better throughout the year. And, you know, when you watch that game versus Sevilla last week, he wasn't playing, right? And you could see, like, Dzeko can't create everything on his own. He's amazing. But he needs that connection between the defense to the offense. And, you know, to me, Vertu was just, he was there the whole year, just running nonstop. It was just an insane to watch him play. He was a turbine. So to me, he was the MVP for me, but Dzeko is obviously a really close second. For me,
what about the flop?
Yeah, the biggest flop for me is actually a pair of people. So I said at the beginning of the year, and if I'm going to be held to my my Twitter hot takes, is that the pair that mattered the most to Roma season this year was Pellegrini and Cristante.
Oh, yeah.
Because they had to grow as a midfield pair together for this team to be great, right? They needed to play well together. You know, obviously, Lopez had some bad games, and Cliver and Under were underwhelming and didn't play in the second half of the season, right? And they were terrible, right? Whatever. But Pellegrini and Cristante never stepped up. Like, Pellegrini was fine. He was okay. Cristante was largely terrible. And to me, this year, that was the biggest flop. I mean, these were two guys that came in with great backgrounds, great pedigrees. They were going to be the next guys to drive they're going to be the De Rossi and Strootman and Pjanic and all that other stuff, be the core of the next midfield. And they just never be, they're not becoming that. Maybe they will in a couple of years, but I don't think that's going to happen. To me, those two are just that sort of binary system is just an absolute flop and failure.
What do you think, Steve, your biggest flop this year?
Well, first I'm just going to circle back to MVP because I agree 100% with John. Vertu, when he wasn't playing against Sevilla, he was missed. Him and Smalling were both missed that game, but I think Vertu was missed more than Smalling. We saw, you know, the problems that Roma had in the midfield. So I think he's a great shout for MVP as well. So, you know, him, Dzeko, Smalling are definitely the most valuable players in the team this season. And then for disappointments, I think Under and Cloiver, just because they really did next to nothing this year. And those are the guys you expected to kind of take the next step. You know, they've been with the club now for, this was their third season, I believe. And Under's just gotten progressively worse the past couple of years. And he really was out of favor with Fonseca. But I also had Pellegrini on my list. And I really do like Pellegrini. But after a really strong first half of the year in terms of providing assists, he kind of really fell off in the second half, which was disappointing to see. And then I think, like John brought up Cristante, I think with Cristante, he's just another example of one of those guys that fit Gasperini's system so well. He played in more of an attacking midfield role for them where he would, you know, I think he had 9 or 10 goals the year before he came to Roma, and that's what caught people's eyes. And now he's playing in more of a deep-lying midfield role a lot of the time, or trying to fill in for Vertu as that box-to-box guy, and he doesn't really fit the bill, and he's been disappointing as well.
Jerry, before I got a couple questions about the David Silva signing. I want your take on the same question for Lazio, because you and I, in our previous episode, we talked about like the best signing and the biggest flop for all of Serie A. What about for Lazio specifically? I think I have a feeling who your MVP is. You can go ahead and say it, but your MVP and your biggest flop for Lazio this year.
Well, my biggest MVP will be Ciro Immobile. That's a given. And if I had to choose different course and say, think outside the box and don't go with Ciro Immobile, I'll go with Luis Alberto, because that's another player who really shined 2 seasons ago and really regained his form. And I think that's another player who deserves a lot of credit and recognition and a viable option for us MVP for Lazio. Without the play of Luis Alberto, we can possibly say that maybe Ciro Immobile doesn't score nearly half of the goals that he scored this season. A lot of the build-up play came from Luis Alberto from the midfield and the advancement off great passes, free kicks, set pieces, whatever you want to call it. The link-up play between the two players and even the build-up from Luis Alberto towards another player until it gets to Immobile has really been built around Alberto this season. So he deserves a lot of credit in regards to how Immobile has been able to play this season and really separate himself from the defense. But biggest flop for Lazio this year, that's a good one. A lot of players have...
You know, they had a really good season, so it may not be that easy to pick a flop, to be honest.
I'll go with either Johnny or Veylon Barrecha. I think Barrecha just really never worked out. He never panned out with Lazio. He was sent out on loan. I think he cost him the Europa League when he gifted a pass against Celtic in the last minutes of the game. I'm always been one of the first to back him up in recent seasons. I always believed in giving players chances. He was never given enough consistent playing time to work himself into the lineup, to understand Inzaghi's plans, his tactics, his philosophy. And in a match like that, when you're not playing for five previous matches and all of a sudden you came back from injury and you get slotted in for a game, it's kind of hard. But at the same time, you do practice week after week and you have to, like, you need to be ready mentally and physically. So it goes both ways. I think I wrote a piece about Johnny, and I thought that he was really going to really step up in the absence of Senna Lulic. I thought maybe he could have provided a spark, something that the team was missing. And he does have good speed, but the problem is he's not an actual wingback, and this is what really hurt them in the end. He was heavily relied upon for most of the season for the latter half of the season, actually, when Lulic got hurt. And it happens. They got him for a really cheap signing, a Lotito-type signing. I think it was for €1 million he got him for.
Lotito-type signing. I love that.
But and another person who I just ready to part with is Jordan Lukaku. I'm really happy that Lazio just gave him the opportunity to play when the season resumed. I was happy to just see him healthy finally, but... I think Inzaghi, if there's one thing he did right, was displaying and showcasing him and giving him the opportunity now to be sold to another club. Now teams have seen that he's healthy. He's able to play again. He can offer another club something off the bench as a substitute, a depth player. And now this will allow Lazio maybe to recoup and get some money back for him. So kudos to Inzaghi for getting that. But Lukaku's been one of the biggest disappointments, and just don't know why he can't stay healthy. No idea
Speaking of the Lukaku family, I think his brother, Romelu Lukaku, I would argue MVP for Inter this year. I'll give my MVP and flop. I give an honorable mention to Stefan De Vrij, who had an incredible season and really adapted well to a back three, unlike Milan Skriniar, who did not adapt well to a big three, to a back three, I should say. But I just think for Romelu Lukaku, the importance, even when he's not scoring, what he does with the hold-up play. I mean, when Steve was talking about Dzeko earlier, it really made me think about what Lukaku does, even when he's not scoring and shooting and when he's off the ball. So much of Conte ball, the build-up to the offense, goes through Lukaku. Tremendous year. You know, he still has at least one more game to maybe score another goal in Europa League, if not two more games. He's on 31 goals in all competitions. Has even exceeded my expectations that were pretty high for him when he came over. So I'll go with him as my MVP, with Stefan De Vrij kind of being the honorable mention. As far as the biggest flop, it's a guy you may not remember because he wasn't even with Inter for the full season. Valentino Lazaro, who, you know, they spent over 22 million euros on him last summer to solve the right back or the right wing back issues that Inter had, and just could not adapt to Conte's formation, and you know, really, really struggled defensively. He gave them something going forward, but was just a disaster in defense. And so they, you know, they loaned him out to Newcastle, and he's probably going to get sold maybe to Bundesliga. So just the fact that he couldn't even contribute for more than a couple of months, I'll go with him as my biggest flop. You know, real quick, before I'll give Jerry some final thoughts to end the pod on David Silva, I want to go around the table to Steve. I'll start with you and John. And you guys can tell me if it's way too early to even think about this, but do you have any sort of an early prediction? You know, with Roma just having finished fifth this year, are you thinking next year about Champions League qualification? Where do you think, Steve, Roma finishes in the table next season?
It is early. I mean, we have to see how the market plays out, who they keep around, who they bring in. I expect to see some improvement if they keep Fonseca around for a second season. I'd like to think they can push for fourth place. You know, if they have Fonseca around for a second season, I trust that more than someone like Pioli at Milan making a push, because Pioli doesn't seem to have that shelf life usually when he's around for a second season. So I'm thinking Roma will still be better than Milan. Napoli might be in a big transitional year, so Roma might still have an advantage over them if they keep enough players around. I'm trying to be optimistic, and I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see if Lazio can sustain too, because they'll be playing on two fronts next year, which will be something new for them. So I'd like to think Roma can make that push for fourth place. I don't see them touching Inter or Juve, but maybe they can catch up to a team like Atalanta or a team like Lazio, and, you know, maybe hold off Milan and Napoli. So we'll see, but it is early. Come check in with me maybe like before the season starts, after we see the roster a little more clearly.
Yeah, I love to put the people. I love to put people on the spot like 6 weeks before the season even starts, and 2 months before the transfer window closes, and see where you think they're going to finish. But what about you, John? A way too early prediction as to where Roma finishes in the table next year?
Yeah, Roma finishes second next year.
Love it.
Third. Juventus wins, but Lazio is going to be sixth or seventh. Well, I said it. They're just not used to playing in two fronts at the same time. So,
I disagree. I think that Lotito got a sniff of what it's like to play for the Scudetto. Seriously. And it's like an old man that, it's like a kid. He got a candy bar. He got a little sniff, a little whiff. He's like, oh my God, I want more of it now. Just want some more. And they keep getting more and more and more. And that's what's happened to Lotito here. Well, I don't know if I explained it right, but like, I just think that he tasted a little bit, and he got so close to a Scudetto. He's got Champions League, and I think things are opening up for him. Inzaghi has already said that he's offered an increase in wages from 2 to 3 million. He said that I am not going to stick around if you're not going to buy players. David Silva is the first guy he's buying. He's buying this the player from Fenerbahce. I believe they're very close to signing Fares from Spal.
And, still might get Kumbula, by the way. You're still Kumbula. In the running for that.
There's Kumbula, and I think that the fact that Lazio haven't been able to chose to not spend money the past few seasons. They sold Berisha for 5 million. They're offloading players, and they're not in a deficit. They made money two seasons prior. I believe they made 50 million profit. And for a small club to make profit, it is very impressive. Now, in addition, they have Champions League. They're making money from advancing, from qualifying for this tournament. The fact that they're going to be playing matches in the group stage will help them get additional funds. If the fact that they're able to advance will help them even greater. But I just think that at the end of the day, if Lazio starts to spend money, this will definitely benefit the squad. And if they're able to retain their starting 11, not sell any of their key players, but only add in. So, but yeah, that's just my opinion, though. Do I see them competing for a Scudetto? No, probably not. But do I see them competing for a fourth place next season? Absolutely.
Steve, you had something to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, they do have to spend some money, because if you know, anything that we learned about Lazio post-COVID is that they don't have the depth to play twice a week, and that's what's going to happen in the Champions League. I mean, the best thing I thought that happened to them last year was crashing out of the Europa League in the group stages. in a group that they probably should have advanced in, because they really don't have the depth to play twice a week, and all their competition near the top was playing twice a week in the Champions League. And I think they do need more depth if they're going to even compete for the top four. I don't see them sniffing the Scudetto again. That's just me being honest, and that's not even me being like a Roma hater on Lazio. I just think that they need more than that, you know, big four that did most of the dirty work for them this year and produced the goals, and Acerbi cleaned up at the back, and, you know, Alberto fed Chiro for almost every one of his goals. They need more help. I mean, Silva's a start, but I think that Lotito has to open his pockets a little bit, like Jerry was saying, because he does intend to do that.
All right, now, Jerry, I'm an old man. I got to wake up very early tomorrow. Usually when I ask you for a quick answer, you give me like 11 minutes. Try to give me like 60 to 90 seconds, please, God. Give me 60 seconds on this David Silva signing, because I really like it for you guys.
I'll sum it up, because I wrote about it today. I haven't released it yet. First off, he provides an option for Luis Alberto. He can rest like he did against Juventus back in down the stretch of the season. He gives an option for Chiro Immobile off the bench, because he's proven to be a number nine, a false nine. And it's just versatility and Champions League experience. So it's a great signing by Lazio.
Love it. We'll wrap it up on that note. Want to send a huge thank you to our special guest, John McDonough. First of all, John, where can people find you on social media? Where can they catch up with all your fun tweets and everything you have going on?
Just on Twitter at Roma 17.
What about you, Steve?
I'm on Twitter also. It's SSCIAVILLOCDT. It's SCIVILLOCDT. And you can find all my work on Chiesa di Totti. You can, if you're interested in Roma, come check out our site. We've got our end of the season reviews. We got report cards being given out position by position this week. Bren and Sean, two of the other writers, do a great job with the women's team. They'll be having previews for the women's team coming out, and then we'll get into our preseason for the men's team. And we have also got a new postseason series we're doing this year, where we're interviewing different Roma clubs from around the country. So some stuff to check out if you're interested in Roma on chiesaditotti.com.
Nice. And Jerry, you've been writing like a madman. Where can people check out your work?
World Football Index. That's when they basically what I've been writing for Cloud Sports and Chelsea Echo. I've been doing a little bit of stuff with them too, but mainly World Football Index. And I'm hoping that I'll be at TFC games in the near future. They haven't announced anything about the MLS for the Canadian teams yet, but that might be in the works as well.
Yeah, we got a rivalry. I'm the Inter Miami guy. Jerry's covering TFC. We should start an MLS pod to go hand in hand with this one. So make sure you follow Jerry on Twitter at jmancini8. Make sure you follow me at Alex Dono. You can pretty much everything I'm doing, mostly audio stuff, not writing so much. You can find all my links and stuff there. We will talk to you guys again next time. Huge thanks again to John and Steve for joining us. We'll talk to everyone on the next episode of the Calcio Connection podcast. Ciao.